Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Ruler podcast. On this edition, we're talking about a subject that doesn't get discussed that much in pro cycling, the risks of head injuries and concussion. It's been highlighted recently by the news that Dimension Data's Bernie Eisel has undergone surgery to relieve bleeding on his brain, caused by a crash at Tirreno Adriatico in March. Although there were no immediate symptoms after the crash, significant bruising seems to have developed over the following weeks, putting pressure on his brain and needing surgery. Some sports, American football and rugby are obvious examples, have well-recognised protocols for spotting and dealing with concussion and head injuries. But in pro cycling, it seems to be more patchy. And the golden rule of concussion, if in doubt, sit it out, often conflicts with the carry-on-at-all-costs, put-me-back-on-my-bike mentality of pro riders. Well, one person with first-hand experience of this is Brent Bookwalter of BMC, who suffered significant problems after a crash in last year's Tour of Britain.
Fortunately, that was the first time I've really suffered any major ill effects from a concussion or head injury in my career, but it was one that I didn't get through easily and definitely didn't take lightly. A little bit of a freak race situation. The short of it is that I hit a parked car at the exit of a corner in the Tour of Britain. Yeah, the direct impact to my head wasn't as hard as just the sort of whiplash and, as the doctors deemed, sort of the brain-to-skull impact that came by virtue of being stopped so suddenly hitting that car. So, yeah, it was super scary. Just, you know, stopped me dead in my tracks. And I was still on the ground thinking I could get back up. And, you know, I guess the medical staff had deemed that I wasn't fit to continue and fortunately had put me on the stretcher and gotten me in the ambulance and taken me out of play. And I was pretty disappointed about that immediately. But then, you know, quickly realized in the coming minutes and hours that, yeah, that was definitely the best course of action. And I was in no shape to continue the race. And really, from there, it just became a longer and longer and longer and more frustrating, drawn-out recovery than I initially imagined.
So when it initially happened, had there not been trained medical staff there at the time, you felt okay to get back on the bike and ride?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, I think time was essentially going faster than I perceived it. Like, I didn't think like I was sitting there on the ground. I didn't think I had been sitting there that long, and I didn't lose consciousness, but those around me, you know, realized that it actually had been quite a while. Yeah, I don't know if I would have been able to actually get back up and get back in the race or not. But I definitely was still in that point where I was still trying to process it and still trying to figure it out. And I definitely hadn't written it off. Whereas, you know, when I look at the severity of the injury and the duration of the recovery, that would, you know, would have been the worst thing that I could have done for myself. So I'm really thankful that there was some good medical staff there, and that and my team was supportive also and seeing my condition and being receptive of it and taking the smart call and pulling me out.
And in the aftermath of the crash, when did you sort of realize that there was going to be a longer term issue here?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, it was really already in that first week. You know, in the first hours and days, I was still just really optimistic of bouncing back, you know, within a few days, like any other crash where you don't have any broken bones or serious physical damage. I was already plotting my path to the world championships and how I was going to get fit and make up for the missed race days to that. But at the same time, those first few days, you know, I had a really bad headache. I kind of felt sick and nauseous all the time. But I was moving nonstop. I was just the travel. The team took me from the UK back to Belgium to see a concussion expert, which was quite a long trip. And then from there, it was back to Girona. So, you know, I spent 2 or 3 days traveling, planes, trains, automobiles. And I just kept thinking, oh, if I can just lay down and get like 2 nights of good sleep, like, you know, that'll be fine. You know, I didn't feel that much similar to or dissimilar to, you know, a bad bout of jet lag or just racing and, you know, hitting the ground and having a long travel. But yeah, I quickly found that first week home that it was much more severe than I originally expected. And then it just really drug on for weeks and then turned into months and ended my season definitely early. And there were times when I was doubting if I was even going to be able to, you know, come back for the season. And, you know, fortunately now I'm thankful that I can look back on these first few months of the season and feel like I'm past it and feeling good.
Are you now fully recovered or are there still sort of after effects?
I'd like to say I'm fully recovered. I feel good. Did some sort of testing based on the initial tests I had after the crash with the concussion expert. We did some of that with the team at the training camp back in December before the season started, and I showed really encouraging improvement. Yeah, the most important thing is just that I feel better. But it was nice to have that a little bit of sort of scientific analysis to back it up too. Definitely helped with the confidence. And yeah, I feel good. I've had a healthy and safe and, you know, pretty successful and consistent first few months of the year, and just really grateful to have it behind me.
You've been a pro. You've been at the sort of highest level in cycling for a long while now. And until last September, had you given much thought to head injuries and concussion?
No, I really hadn't. And that's one of the most frustrating and disturbing parts of it is after going through it, I realized how many of my peers and even friends, you know, I've sort of watched or been aware of going through this. And I had heard about guys hitting their heads and missing races and women riders as well. I always just sort of like brushed it off like it was they're missing the competition or they're missing part of their season because it's like a precaution. Everyone says like, oh, don't take any risks with head injuries. If you hit your head, you know, take some time off. So I just sort of like, you know, viewed it from the outside as this thing that was sort of, you know, sort of a proactive measure to protect their careers and their long-term safety. And I had no idea the frustration and, you know, even sort of anguish and just lostness that, you know, a head injury can entail for people going through it. And fortunately, part of my recovery was having the chance to talk to some other of my peers who had gone through the same. And I learned that no two head hits are the same. So although, you know, maybe my symptoms or my path didn't play out exactly the same as theirs, it was comforting to know that, you know, I wasn't losing my mind or going nuts or, you know, going through something that no one had gone through before. So totally new respect for it.
And do you think that there is a sort of growing awareness of the issue in cycling now? Or are you know, most of your colleagues in the peloton similarly, you know, unaware as you were?
I think it's getting better. Yeah, you know, I think if I look at where I was in my career and where the sport was, you know, even 5-6 years ago, and I imagine myself going through that same thing, I don't think I would have, you know, received the same level of support as far as my recovery or the patience and awareness from the team, the doctors that were on site in the race. So yeah, I definitely feel like there's an increased and growing respect for the issue, but that's not to say that, you know, I don't think our work's done in terms of a sport. I think, you know, we still have some room to improve, and there can be some things that are done to enhance their safety and the longevity of our careers and how we handle these situations where we unfortunately do hit our heads.
And what would your advice be to other pro cyclists, but also, you know, amateur cyclists who may be involved in a crash or banging their head? What would you say to them?
I think more than anything, just really respect the brain and respect the recovery and take the time to come back slow, really slow, even slower than any other injury. I think my takeaway was that the brain heals differently than any other organ or any other part of the body. And there really isn't any clear cut and defined path. So the best thing I could advise is, you know, surround yourself with the best medical help and, you know, peer support group as you can. be wary of setting your expectations too quick and too soon, and really take it slow and give yourself the time you need.
Well, Brent, thank you for joining us. Good to talk to you. Good to hear that you are pretty much 100% recovered, and good luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks a lot, Ian. Enjoyed it.
Brent Bookwalter in Girona. Well, also in Girona, two other riders who are making it their business to spread the word about the dangers of concussion. First, Tom Squeens of Trek Segafredo. Last year, riding for Cannondale Drapac, he had a gruesome-looking crash in the Tour of California. Ian Cleverly caught up with him.
Yeah, it was day two or day three in Cali, when I was in the front group with a couple of other guys, and went down pretty hard on a downhill, hit my head, didn't really have any time to react, and when I got up, it was kind of obvious that I had a concussion. But I continued, and and then later on I called it a day and stopped.
There was a neutral service motorbike guy behind you who was sorting out your bike and helping you get back on your bike, but you were clearly out of it because you were wandering around in the middle of the road trying to pick up your Garmin, staggering while riders were flying either side of you. But I guess you don't remember anything of that, no?
No, but I do know that it was not a Garmin that I picked up, it was just a gel. I needed it to finish the race, obviously, because and that clearly made sense at that point, even though, yes, I do not remember the crash or the following 15 minutes. I gotta say that the neutral service guy was just taking care of my bike and not really looking at me, but obviously from the TV, yes, you could see that I should not be on a bike.
Once the team car caught up with you, because the DS, Tom Southern, was unaware because he was way back up the mountain. When was the decision made to pull you out of the race?
Yeah, so the race at that point had split up quite considerably, and there was no really cars behind us. That's why the moto was the first person there and first guy to react. Even the medical car was not behind us, even the commissaires were not. And that particular area in outside of San Jose is a dead zone for service, so it's not like anyone could have called up Tom and said, hey, just get him off the bike, like, right now. Yeah, it took those 15 minutes until I regained my senses, sort of, and I could realize that I've got a broken collarbone and that I'm not in the race where I was and that I have no recollection of it. And I saw the team car, and they were like, you're getting off the bike, and I did not hesitate to get off my bike at all.
What happens next? What did the team doctor decide to do?
I had to get a surgery because the collarbone was in several pieces, and that meant I had to stay in a hotel room for 3 days, no lights on, just stay out of sunlight, don't use your phone, don't use your laptop. And once the surgery was done, I did what we call a concussion protocol test or whatever. And you do it before you crash, and then you do it after you crash, and it measures your reaction times, your short-term memory, your attention span a little bit here and there. And you kind of want to try and get at least back to the baseline.
And how did you do?
After 7 days, I actually improved on my baseline because I was trying so hard. I was taking it a bit more serious because obviously I wanted to get back on the bike. Yeah, so after 7 days, I started with an easy spin on the rollers, not outside because obviously I still had a broken collarbone. And that way you can also just stop at any point, and if your head gets dizzy or whatever. But for me, it was a good 30 minutes on the rollers, and I had no reoccurring side effects.
So how long would you say it took in total for you to recover from the concussion as opposed to the collarbone?
Yeah, it was the first time I rode was 7 days after, and then slowly I started riding a little bit more and more. And I didn't have any symptoms of a concussion So, but obviously you're not back 100% after 7 days.
Tom Squeans of Trek Segafredo talking in Girona on St. Geordie's Day, one of the noisiest days of the year, as you may have been able to tell. Ian Cleverly also spoke to Matt Brammeyer of Aqua Blue Sport. 3 years ago, Matt was riding for MTN Quebeca in the Tour of Utah when he collided with one of the race support vehicles.
I wasn't aware of anything, really. It was, I think, kind of because my injuries were a little bit more extreme. There was not really any emphasis on looking for anything else. It was just all about, you know, the broken bones and kind of the dangerous stuff, really. And there was never, the word concussion was never mentioned to me. It was never on my radar. It was never put on my radar, and no one ever spoke to me about it. It was only until it was more than a year later, my wife had a crash, and she had a pretty bad knock to the head. And we got some specialist opinions, and we ended up seeing some pretty top-notch people back in the UK. And just from chatting with them, that's kind of when I started realising that I had a lot of the symptoms that they were talking about, and I was still suffering from concussion, and there's a lot of symptoms that I had and after effects that, unfortunately, I think are irreversible and I'll have to live with them.
Those symptoms are what?
Just, like, memory. My memory is pretty useless now. Short-term and long-term, just a lot of things that I just can't remember. And Nikki, I don't notice it myself, but Nikki noticed some small, like, personality changes, which, as I say, I don't really know what they are, but she says I'm not the same person as I used to be. You know, there's slight differences here and there, so that's, you know, quite upsetting, really, but yeah, it's one of the things.
And this is something that you want to make other riders more aware of, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. I think, obviously, they're the major things that you never really want anyone to have. And there's also, like, performance size to it as well. There's something I forgot to mention. And it's, like, basically, if I use my brain a lot and I use my body a lot, you know, like, physical kind of training. Like, for example, if I go out and do a 5-6-hour training ride, then I come home and I try and do some work on my computer, it's just, I'm just, like, completely dead. I can't do it. It's, like, one or the other. So I just kind of have to manage those two, and, you know, if I have to save those kind of sessions on the laptop for days when I'm not training, for example, and that's something that can impact you as an athlete and as a cyclist as well, because it's even, you know, at a stage race, like day to day, it's sometimes difficult to back up, you know, the days of racing, kind of get a bit more fatigued than I used to. Personally, I think I've lost a few years of my career due to it, and yeah, that's why I always try my best to make other people aware of it, especially, you know, friends and just, you know, guys that I know, guys around in Girona. If I see someone's had a bump on the head and, a, you know, maybe a concussion, then I'll always try and put my 50 cents in, really, and just give them a bit of advice. And
do they listen?
Most of the time, unfortunately not. I've had a few teammates who have seen, I've been there when they've knocked on the head, and 100% I'm like, you need to do this. Tell them, you know, till I'm blue in the face, but most of the time, as I said, they don't listen. It's just, I think it's just going to take a bit more time until there's been a few more, unfortunately, like, negative cases like mine, until, you know, people can see it. And in a way, Tom was really lucky that he broke his collarbone, because that forced him to rest. Maybe if he didn't break his collarbone, maybe he would have carried on the stage and finished the stage. Maybe he wouldn't have been sat in a hotel room for 4 or 5 days after his crash. So, you know, it's things like that. It's black and white. It definitely, those initial hours and days after a concussion make all the difference. And quite frankly, if you fuck it up, then, you know, you're stuck with it for the rest of your life.
Pro riders have to be protected from themselves at the end of the day, don't they? Because, you know, all you want to do is get back on and ride your bike.
Yeah, exactly. We just want to jump back on. It's also difficult as well. You see, like, a lot of other sports, like American football, rugby, they're coming up with, you know, some pretty good concussion protocols, but in bike racing, it's not as simple as that, because we can't stop play. We can't just stop the race and then assess what's going on. It has to be done on the road. And
is there any interest from the riders' union in getting involved in this?
Yeah, definitely. I've been pushing it a little bit with them, and also speaking to Willie Stewart, who's a who knows his stuff about concussion, let's say. He's one of the leading specialists in the UK, and he's a keen cyclist himself, which is how I got in touch with him. And he's helping us out a little bit, and he's speaking, hopefully going to be speaking with the UCI and the CPA, just to try and push some kind of protocol and awareness forward as well.
Matt Brammeyer. OK, time to catch up with the editor of Ruler's Desire section, Stuart Clapp. Now, last time we spoke, Stuart, you were in Utah. I presume you're somewhere exotic?
No, I'm in Essex.
Oh.
Yeah, it's similar to Utah in the fact that it's of the same planet, but not quite the same climate, not quite the same roads, and not quite the same company. I was there in Utah with Gore and Fabian Cancellara.
Were you actually doing some work out there, or were you just hanging around with Fabian and riding bikes?
You mean my best friend? We were over there to do a bit of work. It was kind of a branding exercise where they were telling us about themselves and launching the new Shake Dry jacket, which is pretty flipping impressive, actually. But yeah, they've now got Cancellara involved, and Cancellara isn't... You know when brands say, oh, yeah, this was helped designed by our team, blah. It's not really like that. Like, Cancellara might as well be an employee there. He appears to spend a lot of time there. They will have a facility where Fabian will go in, test out a set of bib shorts and go, hem's wrong on that. Can you change it to this? And then an hour later on, they've made him a fresh pair of shorts and gone, is that better? And then he okays it. Looking at the new Shake Dry jacket, you can kind of see why that jacket received so many good reviews from the cycling press before. And they've improved it again. We went out on the day of Paris-Roubaix over there after the race, and it was sleeting. It was like a perfect day to try out Gore clothing. And yeah, it really is a wicked bit of kit.
Now, you and I have both seen, on separate occasions, David Miller's film Time Trial, which has been long in the making, as we all know. Without any spoilers, because the film is released at the end of June, it's an interesting film, but it's a bit unexpected, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really unexpected, but positively so, in my opinion. I loved it, but I know that there are a lot of journalists that came out on that press screening that went, I don't get it.
Especially the ending.
Yeah, especially the ending. I totally get the ending. And if I don't know whether that says more about me, that I get the ending or what, but I it's a bit of a name drop, but I text David afterwards and said, I've just seen the film and I love the ending. And he just wrote back loads of emojis, like hug ones and stuff, because apparently not many people do, and neither does his wife, Nicole. So, but I get it. I get the ending. And if ever you've read anything about the film or the Ruler Classic, where you heard David talking about it after we'd drunk quite a lot of whiskey, he may be on a bit of a downer. But it's one of those films that you get an idea of what it's going to be like before you watch it. And the way David talks about it, it's like, you know, the end of his career, saying about how the end of a pro cycling career isn't like Roy of the Rover stuff. You don't go out at the top. You don't, like, it's very rare that a rider goes out. I won the Tour. Goodbye. You know, fanfare speech on the Champs-Élysées. It doesn't happen like that. So David talks about this and how, but what you see in the film is much funnier than that. It's more of an extension of David Miller's personality than you think. I mean, he's an artistic guy. He's very creative, and working with Finley, who directed and produced the film, I think it's a really, really good film. Don't expect a total out and out sports film. To me, a lot of the behind the scenes stuff is really, you don't get that sort of access.
The bits in the race car and around the race car are brilliant. It's really, I can't remember seeing something like that before.
No, I counted the swears in it. There's quite a lot of swearing in it. There's quite a lot of swearing, mainly from Robbie Hunter. But it's fully justified. It's fully justified. But yeah, the ending's brilliant, because I was really set up for it to be I don't know. Maybe it does say more about.
And that's where we're going to leave Stuart for a while, because he's about to give away a bit too much about the end of the film, Time Trial. And given that David Miller and the team have spent so many years making it, the least you can do probably is go along to a cinema and see for yourselves. And that's it from this edition of the podcast. Thanks to Stuart, thanks to Tom, Matt and Brent for their thoughts on a serious issue. Take it easy. Speak next time.
I really enjoyed it. I don't know how many other people are going to enjoy it. I did, because I thought it was funny.
You can understand why some people wouldn't get it at all.
Yeah. But if you don't get it, I think that's a barrier to our friendship.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.